Welcome to Christian Historical Fiction Talk. If it's happening in the world of Christian historical fiction, we're talking about it right here. I'm your host, author Liz Tolsma, and I'm so glad that you decided to join us for today's episode. We have a first-time guest here, but she is not a first-time author, and that is Erin Bartles. She has won award after award for her books, and if you read her latest, The Lady with the Dark Hair, you will certainly understand why she has won so many awards. She is very deserving of them. Before we get to that, though, welcome. If you are new here, I am so glad to have you along. Be sure to subscribe to Christian Historical Fiction Talk on your favorite podcasting platform, and also check us out on Facebook, X, Instagram, and Pinterest. We are in all of those places. That way you can keep up with us. You can find out when new episodes release, and I sometimes put up polls or ask questions over on social media, and sometimes those answers end up as part of an episode. So be sure to do that. To all of you who have been here before, who have listened to before, welcome back. I'm always so pleased to have you. Thank you so much for your support. If you haven't become a patron yet, head over to liztolsma.com. Check out all the benefits that you get from doing that. Depending on the level that you choose, you get early access, the ability to ask a question of the author, as well as possibly being entered into a book giveaway every month. So check that out. All right, it is time now to get into our interview with Erin Bartles about her book, The Lady with the Dark Hair. Welcome to the show today, Erin. It's so good to have you with us.
Thank you for having me. I'm really excited to talk to you about what I'm up to.
Yes, and I'm excited to hear about it. And you are a first-time author on this podcast, but you are definitely not a first-time author. You have several books out, several award-winning books out. And so I'm just so pleased that we were able to make this happen, and I'm excited to introduce you to the audience. So actually, instead of me doing it, why don't you go ahead and introduce yourself?
Well, sure. Yes, this will be my sixth novel that we're talking about today, and it is a dual timeline novel like my first one was. So I don't always write historical, but this particular one is. And I also work for a publisher. I've worked for them for 22 years as a marketing copywriter. So I read a lot of books and I try to sell other people's books. I do the back cover copy and the catalog copy and, you know, the things that end up on websites and to help you decide what book to buy. So that's what I do with my 9-to-5 time. And I'm also a pastor's wife and I have a son who's a teenager now. And so, yeah, we're busy with all the things, but it's really fun to find time to chat about books with people.
And it's always fun to chat with a fellow book lover as you are, especially about a book as fantastic as The Lady with the Dark Hair. I absolutely devoured this book and loved every minute of the ride that you took us on. So tell us more about The Lady with the Dark Hair.
Sure. As I said, it was a dual timeline book. So the past timeline takes place starting in 1878 in southern France, and it follows a young woman named Viviana, who is Catalonian or Catalan. I never can remember what's the proper way to say that, who is living in the house of an artist and is working there in the kitchen and kind of falls into this life of learning how to paint. And she acts as an artist model for a while, and something in her past catches up with her and she has to leave and go on this sort of cross European trip with a person that she met in this house who happens to be the ancestor of the person in the present tense. So Francisco Vella is this man from Gibraltar who is a color man, which means that he sells pigments and paints and things like that to artists and artisans. And so he's always going on these trips all around as he's selling and buying things. And this man is the ancestor of the modern day storyline main character, Esther. So Esther and her mother run a museum dedicated to Francisco Vella's work. And it's something that it's a passion project. It's losing money. It's not, he's not a terribly well-known artist, which they think is scandalous because they think he's just wonderful. But this woman, Esther, meets up with a former art history professor of hers and is really excited to be able to show him one of what she believes is the best painting that Vella ever did, which is entitled The Lady with the Dark Hair, which is where the title comes from. And everything's kind of thrown into question as her professor says, "This doesn't really look like what you showed me at the museum. Are you sure it's his?" And so she goes on this kind of quest to kind of vindicate herself and her family. And in the meantime, both of these women learn a lot about themselves and about identity and about what they want to do with their lives, despite the restrictions upon them. In the past, a lot of the restrictions are very external. You can't go here. You can't learn this. Women can't do this. And then in the modern day, which is stuff that we all deal with, a lot of the restrictions are internal. I can't do this. I don't have time for this. I don't have the talent for this. So it follows these two women on this journey, this interior and exterior artistic journey.
It's just such a fascinating premise. And the way that you pulled it all together was so wonderful. Now, I know when I read dual timeline books, very often I find myself liking one timeline over the other or one character over the other.
Yeah.
As you wrote this book, did you find yourself favoring one character over the other, or liking writing one timeline better than the other?
Not exactly. I would say Esther was easier to write, the present day timeline, because I think, you know, as a busy woman who has artistic leanings and dreams and things that I want to do with my time and things that I have to do with my time, I really relate to her. But I really also enjoyed writing those past timeline storyline, that all those chapters, because it's really fun to follow somebody as they kind of fight against things that are restricting them for no reason. You know, I was a teenager in the 90s, and even then you still, as a female athlete, as a female student, felt judgment and definitely felt like people thought you weren't as good and didn't deserve as much time or as much respect. And so it's interesting to go back when it's far, far more restrictive for women and think about, okay, if I were living back then, how would I manage to do the thing that I felt I was called to do, despite those restrictions? So it was really fun to write her.
Now, kind of going back to the characters that you were talking about and about their storylines, it was nice that you brought out that they were sort of going through similar internal struggles, but their outward journeys were so completely different. Viviana is crisscrossing Europe and mixing with these artists, some of them like Mary Cassatt, very famous artists that we know down to today, and sort of, I guess in today's terms, we would say living her best life, while Esther is sort of restricted because she's caring for her mother who suffers from schizophrenia. And so her world is very small. It's this little town in Michigan, this, you know, like you said, this labor of love kind of art gallery. Did you do that, even though their inward journeys are the same, did you do it on purpose that their outward journeys are so very different?
Well, it's hard to say. I feel in my own process of writing, it's hard to say what I've done on purpose and what I haven't. Sometimes you get to the end and you realize that you've done things that you didn't intend, but somewhere subliminally, you must have intended them. So I'm not sure if I can answer that. I will say that there's something powerful in taking two opposing things and putting them together and comparing them and contrasting them. So if you take somebody who's got outwardly, she's traveling lots of places, but she's still very restricted in what people think she's capable of and people think she can do or should do. Whereas in the modern day, she leads a very small life and she has these desires to lead a bigger life. She's afraid to. She thinks she can't for various reasons. But there are also people in her life that really push her to expand. Rather than trying to keep her in a box, they're trying to push her out of the box. And I think that those are two sides of the same coin. You know, the restrictions we place on ourselves versus the restrictions society might place on us. And fear of being wrong, fear of making the wrong choice or taking the wrong step or taking the wrong risk keeps people from doing a lot of interesting things in life.
Yes, very much so. I love that you said that and brought that out because it's very true. I was one of these people who lived a very small life, had a lot of fear until I don't know what changed, but I started traveling and fell in love with it. And I think my world has really expanded. So it's great when people can overcome their fears. And I think that's a lot of what this book is about.
Yeah, I think so.
Now, there had to be a lot of research that went into both the historical and the contemporary timelines. I mean, in the historical, you're talking about painting and famous painters and mixing paints and pigments and all that. And then in the modern day time, you're talking about mental health. In both of them, Gibraltar, which is not a place that most people end up in on their European tours. So many different facets. What was research like for this book?
Well, first of all, what's so funny about people not going to Gibraltar now is that in the past, that was like one of the first places you'd stop once you got over to Europe. It's definitely it's the mouth of the Mediterranean. You'd have to stop there. And lots of famous people have Wordsworth and Mark Twain and tons of people from literature and history. So yeah, I chose Gibraltar partly because, well, probably mostly because I actually know somebody, a former professor of mine is from Gibraltar. And we had reconnected over a different book that I'd written and we're keeping in touch. And I said, I'd really like to find out more about this place. I want to interview you about what it was like to grow up there. He has every book in the world that's ever been written on Gibraltar. So I had stacks and stacks of them. And he also had access to all sorts of people who still lived there, relatives and friends. So any question I had that I couldn't find an answer to, I just put it to him on WhatsApp. And he's like, let me go ask my group. And he would come back with an answer of things that you just couldn't research. So that was really helpful. And beyond that, yeah, I read a lot about the particular art movement in the late 1800s, Impressionism and Impressionist artists and things of that nature. But a lot of the things I already knew because I do paint. And so when it came to talking about techniques and the way people go about painting, I knew a lot of that firsthand. I also did some in-person research at a life drawing class to find out what that was like and did some research with some fascinating books about where we get color, where we've gotten pigments and the history of different pigments. And so it was all a joy because I enjoy reading about things I'm interested in. And that's why I choose the books I choose to write, I suppose. They're all subjects that I'm interested in and I want to have reason to read more about. And it did take quite a long time, but it was all really enjoyable. And then the other thing I did during the year that I was working on this book the most was I decided that, yes, I've painted for a long time, but I don't paint people. And I'd really like to be able to paint people. So I started a project in 2022 where every month I painted a self-portrait. And I shared the progress on Instagram and Facebook and, you know, got better and better and better and then got worse and then got better again. And it was just really fun to have that firsthand tactile experience of doing that.
Oh, that's so neat. And so I don't want to give anything away, but you're doing a self-portrait every month for a year. That sort of translates into the book, doesn't it?
Yeah. Because Esther's mother, one of her projects as an artist has been to record, you know, the process of aging herself through portraits of herself. So, and that's really how lots of women artists over the centuries have learned how to paint because they were excluded from schools and life drawing classes. And so as long as you have a mirror, you have a model. And lots of women painted self-portraits because of that, or painted portraits of their close family members, which, you know, when you think about the subjects that women have painted in the past and how domestic so many of them are, a lot of that's because that's what they were restricted to. You know, that's who they had around the house. They couldn't go out and paint the same way men could. So a lot of them just painted themselves and their sisters and moms and kids and things like that.
Oh, that's great. I was reading your biography on your website, and you take us on a journey through your life through books. And so tell us about your love affair with books.
Oh, well, yeah. it's hard to narrow down for me. Anytime somebody wants me to say what my favorite book is or the book that changed your life or anything like that, it's so hard for me to choose a favorite. I can't choose a favorite movie either. I can't choose a favorite song. It's an accumulation of things that you love. And I spent most of my time as a kid in my head. I was a introverted second child. My sister had to bribe me to play with her, like with Barbies and things like that. I was either reading, drawing, or I was pretending to be an animal of some sort. I spent a lot of time in trees and in snowbanks and things like that. I just really enjoyed being alone and imagining things. And I think that's why I gravitated toward reading as a kid, because you're creating, you're a co-creator when you're reading with the author. And that's what's so fun about it. They're putting these, you know, words on a page, and you are taking that in and creating these images in your mind and these feelings. And it's so cool that when we read something that's well written, we actually go through the emotions that the characters are going through. And they can read that on brain scans, that your same part of your brain is lighting up as if you were in that situation. And that's such a cool, amazing thing that we get to be a part of. That, yeah, I mean, I just loved reading as a kid, and I just never stopped.
Yes, you have quite the extensive reading list that you have on your website there. And I admit that despite being an English minor in college and an avid reader, I haven't read probably half the books that you have.
Well, but I'll say this, I'm never the one who's reading the next big book. I got a recommendation to read a book when I was in college. My college roommate recommended it, and I got to it 20 years later. Like, I am a slow reader. And I'm never, like, people ask, oh, have you read this? Have you read this? And I'm like, no. I haven't read any of those books. So it just depends on where you put your focus.
True. So then I guess I won't ask you which book made the biggest impact on your life. That was one of my questions. So
that's always somebody's question. I will say the book I've read the most in my life is Watership Down. I used to read it at least once a year, sometimes twice a year as a kid. And I've read it out loud twice to my son. I've read it out loud to my husband. I watched the 1978 animated movie a zillion times. Like, all I wanted to do was read Watership Down as a kid.
Well, there you go. And so have you managed to create a love of reading in your son?
I would say sort of. We really read a ton when he was younger. As he's gotten older, he doesn't look toward books as much. He's doing a lot more making of music, and he spends a lot of his time doing that, which to me is a very creative and worthwhile endeavor. But we also, as a family, are cinephiles, and so a lot of our storytelling consumption is through movies.
Okay, yes. And that's great to hear that there are different forms of creativity in your family.
Oh, absolutely. That,
yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think it's good that he sees, you know, beyond our regular jobs. Both my husband and I write. My husband's also very involved in podcasting and retelling The Pilgrim's Progress through his podcast right now. And it's really fun, I think, for a kid to see his parents having avocations beyond their vocations and saying it's worth spending time on this because it brings enjoyment to us, even if it's not the thing that pays the bills. And that's definitely something that wasn't really modeled for me. I don't think most people in my parents' generation spent a lot of time on the things they enjoyed outside of the things they had to do for work. So I think it's a really good example for him. And I like that he found his thing.
Exactly. I agree 100% with you. I'm a little older than you. And so my parents are probably a little older than yours, but same kind of thing. They always were like, you have to make money. You have to make a living.
Yeah.
You can't do that being an author. And I told my kids, when you grow up, if it's legal, moral, ethical, I will support whatever it is that you choose to do.
Yeah. Well, and that's the wonderful thing about my parents, and they might be older than you think because I was a later baby. They, even though, like, I know that my dad felt he had to do his job to support his family, even though for much of my life, he really didn't like it. I never ever felt anything but 100% support from my parents about everything I did. And even though they knew, I'm sure, you know, okay, an English degree is not really useful. You have to get more degrees for it to be useful. And oh, you're not going to do that. Okay. But they always supported me. And I think that they knew that I was going to go into something in the arts in some way, which is never a real lucrative life choice.
It just isn't. Unless you're like John Grisham or somebody like that,
right.
Then they make plenty of money. But you and I, not.
Right. But most people don't really make a lot of money when they're doing their art. And sometimes people find when they have a creative bent, and they feel like they have to make that into their job. Once they make that into their job, they don't enjoy it anymore because they have to do all these other things to support it. You know, all the sort of business and marketing and all of these managerial type things that aren't the art. So I feel like there's kind of a shift. There was a shift toward everybody trying to make their thing that they liked, their job. And I think that there's starting to be a shift in the other direction. Like it's okay not to make money on the thing you enjoy doing. You know, it's okay to create something and not have to sell it.
Right. And your husband's podcast sounds absolutely fascinating.
I love
Pilgrim's Progress. That is one book that I read as a young child that made an impact.
You should definitely check it out. It's called High and Silver Presents The Pilgrim's Progress. So High and Silver are the streets that John Bunyan was imprisoned. That's the cross street where he was imprisoned. But it's fantastic. And anybody who likes that story, who likes things like Lord of the Rings or Chronicles of Narnia or anything like that, and anybody who likes audiobooks would love that podcast. You should definitely check
it
out.
Okay, will do. And I will drop a link for that podcast in the show notes so people can check that out. So what is coming up next from you?
Well, what's coming up next for me is a bit of a departure from things that I've done before in some ways. So I mentioned that I have a couple dual timeline stories, and then I have a bunch of contemporary books in between those. But the next thing I write is going to be a full historical fiction about real people and real events, rather than a fictional character in real events. It's going to be about very particular people. And I'm being vague on purpose because I don't want to tell people yet what it's about.
Okay.
Because it's one of those things where it's a really good idea and I'm very surprised that nobody's done it yet.
Okay.
And I'm a little worried that if I talk about it, it's going to get out there somehow and somebody's going to get to it before I can get to it.
Sure.
You know what I mean?
Yes. Yes. Oh, I know. I feel the same way.
I'm holding it close to the vest, but it'll be a little different in that if you're talking about real historical people, you can't make them do just whatever you want.
Right.
And so they are the people they are. And my previous books have all been published by a Christian publisher. And they definitely have, you know, themes of redemption and hope and forgiveness and all of these things that I think a lot of readers enjoy. And I can't force that framework onto this other story. So it'll probably be published by a general market publisher, God willing. And probably means that I'll reach a somewhat different audience, and hopefully people who have enjoyed my books so far will follow me in that direction. It won't be, you know, anything that you couldn't publish by a Christian publisher, but it just doesn't seem like it would be the right story for them.
Okay. Well, that sounds good. You've piqued my attention, that's for sure. And so if people like myself want to follow you so they keep up with you, keep up with this book, find out what it's going to be all about and when it's going to release, how can they go about connecting with you?
Well, I'm on Instagram at Erin Bartles Writes, and I'm on Facebook at Erin Bartles Author. For some reason, I didn't think to make those the same. So you can definitely follow me on either of those platforms. But if you want to make sure that you don't miss things, you can sign up for my email newsletter through my website, which is just erinbartles.com. And if you Google me, you can find me other places, I'm sure.
Okay. And there's a little something extra if we sign up for your newsletter, isn't there?
Yes, I have been over the past few years giving away an audio short story, which my audio husband has helped me produce. And at some point, I'll replace that with another one when I have the time. And whoever has signed up for my newsletter, anytime I have a free thing that is for new people, it'll go out to all the old people as well. Not that you're all old people, but you know what I mean.
Yes, yes. Perfect. Perfect. That sounds great. Well, Erin, it has been so delightful getting to know you and learning more about The Lady with the Dark Hair. Like I said, I loved it, so I highly recommend it to the listeners. Thank you for taking time out of a busy schedule. We certainly appreciate it, and best of everything to you.
Thanks so much. It was great talking to you.
I absolutely loved getting to know Erin. It was so much fun to talk to her and to find out more about her writing and about her life and what kind of person she is. Absolutely fantastic author. Be sure to pick up The Lady with the Dark Hair. I am telling you, it's well worth it. I will have a link for the book in the show notes. So just go over to liztolsma.com. You can find out more about the book, get that link. Find out more about Erin. I'll have a link to her website and also a link to her husband's podcast on there. So head over to Liz Tolsma, check all of that out. Well, at the beginning of the year, I said we were going to do some different things. And that's exactly what is going on next week. Next week, I invited six Barber Publishing authors, that's right, six authors, to come and join me on the podcast and talk about their novella collection and other things that they have going on. And we had a fantastic talk. I think with six people, I probably could have about 6 hours worth of content. So don't worry, it's not going to be that long. I'm going to condense it down, but it was fun. We laughed. We had a great time. So please be sure to come back next week to check out my Barber Roundtable and find out which authors are there. I'm not going to tell you, but there's some of your favorites who are part of that. So be sure to check that out. I want to thank you so much for taking time out of what are very busy days and lives to listen to the podcast, for recommending it to your friends and family who love Christian historical fiction as much as you do. I really do truly appreciate it. I hope you have a wonderful week, and we will see you next time.